Blog Talk Radio.
March 11th, 2010. My name is Doug Kelly. I'm here with my good friend and co-host Grant Rubendunst.
Hey, Grant. Hey, everybody. Got 104 shows.
Yeah, I know it. Well, after tonight.
And time really flies when you're having fun.
It must. It really must. So, interesting topic we've got tonight. We've got our cohort,
our favorite
buddy, our friend, members. Board member, Kevin Costa. Hey, Kevin.
Hello, everybody. Hey, welcome. Thank you.
And Kevin's going to be sharing some of his research regarding dolphins and telepathy tonight with us. Something I didn't really, I guess I knew a little bit that you had done that, but I don't know much about it, so it's going to be an interesting topic, interesting show tonight. If you have a question for Kevin, you're certainly welcome to join us in the chat room and type a question, or if you want to give us a call, the numbers are on your screen. You even have a click the talk button if you have a headset on your computer. So if you have questions.
Yeah, we don't bite, so call, don't be afraid, call in.
And I will, you know, give you warning up front, of course, for whoever is on there now, you know, we won't take the prank calls, we will report them. We had a rotten episode here a couple of weeks ago, but we hope that we'll continue on as normal and we'll only have good calls, so.
Well, I certainly hope so.
Yeah, well, Kevin being here, it kind of puts a damper on the pranksters, you know.
the dolphin research really goes back probably back to the 80s. I mean, my first experience was when I was at Florida International University, and I met a professor there by the name of Dr. Betsy Smith. And Grant, you may be more familiar with this also in your line of work, but with working with autistic children, with dolphin therapy, actually. And she was one of the leaders in it at that time, in the early 80s.
So are you saying she was using techniques for autistic children?
Basically, right, because for some reason, within a natural setting, I mean, it wasn't like an aquarium setting. These dolphins were freely down in Grassy Key. There was one research center in Grassy Key, another one up in Key Largo, and I happened to be the one in Key Largo. And I noticed how the dolphins would interact with the autistic children that never interact with humans before. And all of a sudden, there was this connection between them. They were actually even becoming verbal for the first time. And you saw these parents actually just breaking down and almost crying. And that kind of excited me, like, what is this connection? What is there between these two? And doing more research, I looked into the brainwave patterns of autistic children and so forth, and saw that in most of the time, they happen to be in what we would call a meditative state, which, and of course, a lot of research with anomalous activities of PSI, that it's generally happens when individuals are in kind of that relaxed emotional meditative state between the alpha. Basically, the alpha waves, which are a little bit lower than the beta, which is the normal everyday awake kind of like activities when the brain functions. So that kind of got me interested, and that's where I started, actually, from that point on. And I've spent about 5 years down in the Keys working with dolphins on and off through the summers.
Wow.
So that was an interesting experience.
The things you learn about your friends.
Yeah, I know, right? You never knew I was a dolphin maniac to a degree.
Yeah, you're out there in a pool with the dolphins all day long. So what do you think is the most – what's your take on it? Do you think that dolphins possess the ability to communicate in a telepathic manner, Kevin?
Well, my own belief is, yeah, I think there's something to that. I know that physically we all say that there's sonar. I know that the Navy and so forth, especially during Vietnam, was using the dolphins for sonar. And in fact, right now, articles that I've been reading just recently, they're thinking that the sonar that they're testing in the waters right now are actually could be causing one of the major destructions of the dolphins and whales and so forth that in the recent years have been beached and so forth in large pods at a time. Is because of the sonar research that they're doing out there in the oceans right now. In fact, a couple of years ago, there was a law that they tried to pass because I think it was 2007. It was the year of the dolphin, something of that nature.
Yeah.
And there was a wide, during Earth Day and so forth, a wide attraction to probably stop this type of research, which it did for a short time. But the military, with the security and things that are going on now with terrorism, they're up to their old tricks again, testing sonar, actually out off the coast of California, which there have been a lot of sightings of whales and dolphins that it's just messing up their sonar. Now, does sonar deal with telepathy? Good question. That's something that, unfortunately, a lot of scientists are kind of backing away from, because with the dolphins, just like with any human being, it deals with the mind, and it's not 100% being able to be proven in a laboratory in a scientific manner.
From the standpoint, physiologically, mm-hmm. dolphins have just about the same size brain capacity as we do, don't they?
Actually, they even have a larger.
They have a larger and more larger frontal lobe?
Yes, and according to the evolution of the dolphin, basically the dolphin's brain over time has grown alongside with man, but actually has grown to a larger extent. And that's what kind of interested Lily in basically in the very beginning way back. He was one of the first researchers on dolphin interspecies communication. And he was wondering, how could this type of animal similar to mankind, so to speak, you know, evolution-wise, his brain enlarged, but for what purpose? And the areas that they, you know, through autopsies of the dolphins and so forth, found out that the parts of the brain that really grew were those part of the frontal lobes and so forth that are areas known for psychic activity, intuitive behavior, things of this nature.
Well, humans are known as the areas for executive functioning. It's how your mind orders and processes things. So that's a really fascinating kind of, example of. Didn't they think that at one point in time, Kevin, that one of the reasons why that frontal lobe may have developed more was because of the fact that of low visibility at depth and a mm-hmm. number of other things, and so they were compensating in order because they are social creatures. They have to communicate amongst one another, and now sonar would come in real handy if visibility is low, but
correct.
So would telepathy.
Well, that's exactly it. I mean, one theory primarily is that the evolution theory that man as well as the dolphins were two types of mammals that were actually originally land mammals that at times due to evolution, due to whatever was happening and the changes of the earth, one continued on the land and the other went to sea. And the dolphin, because when you look at their anatomy, it's very similar. They actually have fingers just like we do in their fins. They actually have the bone structures of five fingers. They are born with hair. The hair, of course, wears off as they do the water or whatever the case may be, but they do have facial hair. There's a lot of similarities. And the theory is that as they evolutionized in the water, as Grant, kind of like, as you said, there was no need due to their environment to speak verbally or anything like that. It definitely would have served no, you know, use. Where in this case, they had to develop another way of communication, another way of finding themselves underneath the ocean, as you said, finding food, things of this nature. So that's why maybe those parts of the brain developed, where we, of course, today, as we well know, we've developed more verbally. That's what we base our languages on. That's what we base our forms of communication on. So it's kind of like a lost, to me, it's a lost form of tribal communication that mankind just has kind of left on the wayside.
But it wasn't really necessary for us to communicate telepathically, because as a hunter-gatherer, we could shout, we could make hand signals,
right, exactly,
and everything else.
Exactly. We had
as opposed to dolphins in an aquatic environment, they're, you know, they have no arms or hands to signal each other.
Correct.
So sonar, you know, being able to whistle and do their tweets or whatever, probably carried a long distance. Well, sound travels 5 times quicker underwater than it does in
right,
the air anyway.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. But the fact still is, you know, which I've always been interested in, okay, so sonar, they can, almost like a bat, they can basically process these pings or whatever in the water, and it comes back, but still there's the point that scientists have never been able to figure out. How do they process that in their brain? How do they literally, holographically see what sonar is coming back? And that they've never been able to yet figure out. They know that it exists. The Navy and scientists, you know, in the military have copied that idea for their own sonar to develop it for submarines and other forms of, you know, instrumental usage and exploring the ocean bottoms. But, again, how do these dolphins transmit it? And from some of the research that's been going on in Hawaii, the Dolphin Institute and so forth, they found out that these dolphins can actually see almost what they believe to be is almost holographic images in their minds of what's going on. And to me, that's kind of telepathy.
Yeah, it's interesting.
You know, it's thoughts. It's basically visual, just thoughts that sometimes, on my own experience with forms of telepathy or PSI, is that they're just like pictures that come into your head. They're just thoughts that appear, almost like on a blank screen. And that, to me, seems very similar to possibly what's going on with the dolphins. But they've just continued this form of evolution and this process a lot more, as Grant, as you said, because we didn't need to. But if you think about it, there still is some of this going on. So think of a mother and a baby or a child. You know, when they compare.
Especially think of the nonverbal communication. You know, you look at a mother and a newborn, mm-hmm. and what's the most important form of communication? They make eye, not necessarily a newborn, but, you know, a couple months old infant, they make eye contact, touch, tactile, and eye contact. So very important. It may be the same with dolphins, too, though, you know, Kevin, because mm-hmm. when you watch them in pods, they bump up against each other and everything else, and touch is important to them as well, I suppose, but I could see where, you know, like if you're, especially if you're swimming at night in an aquatic environment, man, telepathy would be a really good thing. I mean, the grunting and the whistling and everything else, that's really good, but the ESP would be like an extra icing on the cake for communicating.
Definitely.
I'm just kind of curious. What kind of, did you observe any of the interaction between the dolphins and the autistic kids yourself?
Actually, I did. And like I said, at first I was somewhat, you know, kind of looking at it and wondering if it was more of just the novelty that attracted the autistic children, that here was this new creature that they had never seen before, and maybe that's attracted them into possibly mimicking speech, and then finally looking at their parents and communicating in some way, which they had according to what Dr. Betsy Smith said, that they never had in the past. This was like the very first time, you know. So maybe it was the novelty of it. I don't know. But according to other research, there definitely seems to be something more that's going on there.
How long were they interacting when you saw them?
Well, when I saw them, they were actually in the water with the dolphin, surrounded by generally the trainer. And usually there was also a therapist or a parent with them in the water, of course. So there was maybe about four of them in there. And the dolphins were free to go if they wished to. Again, this was not like something you would see in the sea aquarium. No one was pulling somebody's, you know, pardon, but pigtails down underneath the water, drowning them or anything like that. I mean, these were not violent creatures whatsoever. They were free to go anytime they want. They actually, where this is located, it's called, let's see if I can even remember, what is the name of this place? Because actually, I believe you can still go down there today. It's called the Dolphin Plus Research Center, I believe. I think that
they've got something out there close on Grassy Key now where you go swim with the dolphins. So there's probably some of the old descendants of some of the research.
And they're all over today, but unfortunately most of these, they kind of put them into pens, which is not their natural habitat, and it's basically driving them crazy. Not just the sonar, but as you said before, they are very social animals. Just like human beings. I mean, if you put a human being in solitary confinement for its life, it's basically, you know, a human being is just going to go possibly insane. I mean, they have nothing to do, no form of communication on very, very short times. And the same thing with these dolphins. So these things like Grassy Key, the autistic children, these dolphins were free to go whenever they wanted, but they enjoyed the company. They wanted to be there. And
that's really interesting, you know, but dolphins seem to have an affinity for human beings, though, too. I mean, if you look at the old stories of dolphins over the centuries, there's been more than one case of people that have fallen overboard or been shipwrecked and have actually been rescued by dolphins.
Yes.
I mean, how would you explain why does a dolphin have that affinity with human beings? I mean, you know, it's very interesting, you know, that they and I think that dolphins, by and large, are held in high regard by humans.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, if you go back to the ancient and through anthropology and so forth, I mean, there's so many different ancient civilizations that basically respect them almost as entities of the gods, you know, messengers.
Yeah, the icons,
gods.
Greek and
right.
And I'm trying to think of the other one, the Crete.
Phoenicians, you had the Phoenicians, you had...
Right,
the,
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And I guess it's because with those civilizations, with their relationship to the sea, dolphins did have that connection. They were out there constantly with them. And for some reason, these dolphins do... I don't know why. I mean, unless maybe in the future we can communicate with them more, whether it be telepathy or some other means. But my own belief is they feel akin to us, that there is that kind of connection between their species and our species.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that may be it.
Here's a question from Sherry in the chat room. Do the dolphins mimic the sounds of the autistic children, such as their laughter, et cetera?
I really, when I was there, I did not see that, if you want to know the truth. I did see the autistic children mimic the dolphins. I didn't see the other way around where the dolphins mimic the autistic children, but I did see the autistic children, who normally be very quiet, started making the same crackling sounds that the dolphin did, almost trying to mimic their sounds.
Yeah, that makes sense.
You know? But again, is this a novelty, or is there some really form of psychic connection between the two, as I said? Because if the dolphin sonar is a form of telepathy in that alpha theta state, which to me seems realistic, because this is something else about the dolphins and their physical features, is that unlike us, their breathing and so forth is not... involuntary, it's voluntary.
Mm-hmm.
And that has a lot to do with the fact that they are, you know, constantly in control and so forth. And I kind of lost my train of thought.
Well, there seems to be a certain serenity, a certain peacefulness associated with dolphins.
Yeah, it's almost like they're the equivalent of I think they're functioning intellectually higher than a dog is, and a canine is, but there's some similarities there. canines are social creatures. Dolphins are social creatures. I mean, we seem to have some sort of bond with canine, and some smaller, thank God, some smaller felines. But you know, it's almost like dolphins are attracted to us for certain reasons too. Now, you know, supposedly one of the reasons that the dog became domesticated was because it hung around us, and it knew that we threw out trash, and it fed on our trash, so they just started kind of hanging with us. Same may have been true with dolphins in the sense that if they saw fishing boats, they knew the guys were going to have cut bait and everything else, and they're smart enough creatures where they might have somehow, you know, I think it's more than that personally, but, you know, I think there's a parallel there.
But you're thinking that they may be attracted to, of course, hey, a free meal, let's face it, you know?
Yeah, and maybe they were, because they're curious creatures, they just decided to kind of tag along with us. Who knows?
That definitely could be true, definitely.
Because we're certainly not a creature that, you know, we don't make friends. We usually kind of kill whatever gets close to us. So, you know, it's interesting that they would trust us. I mean, because most animals don't.
Well, that's the thing.
I'm close to it.
Yeah. And the dolphins, they are very trusting, but at the same time, they do keep their distance.
Mm-hmm.
There was always, every time I was with a particular dolphin, and I mean, I worked with about three or four of them that came into the pen. Literally, they jumped over a fence into the lagoon. And this was in the Dolphin Research Center down just a little bit north of Marathon. I don't know if that's where Grassy Key is or not.
Yep.
But there was a gentleman that ran it there. His name was Manny, and Manny Forrest. And he allowed me to do research. I was down there with scuba gear, and I tried doing telepathy with him and so forth just to see. And unfortunately, it was so murky and everything, I heard the pings. I could feel the vibrations of their sonar, which if you've never felt that, it is one of the most unusual, best experiences in your life. It literally knocks you for a loop, literally. Underneath the water, you can feel the sonar hit you in the back of your head, almost to the point where your vertebrae, your neck meets, almost where that very sensitive area, and it literally goes all down your spine and
up
your brain.
Water.
This was actually below the water. Up top, you can hear the sounds, but if you're down underneath and they're down there throwing out their sonar, you literally can feel it go up and down your spine. Really an unbelievable, it's actually very relaxing, believe it or not. You would not think that, but it really is. It's not scary. It's not threatening in any way. It's almost relaxing. And then they're, in fact, doing research right now with that. They call it some form of sonar therapy, where they're actually using tapping and certain vibrations of sounds.
Well, we know that low-frequency sounds can cause people to feel and can have, can manifest things similar to hauntings. Low frequency sounds and low frequency vibrations can do that. So, you know, but the thing is, though, you know, I remember having done quite a bit of diving with over 200 hours underwater.
Mm-hmm.
I remember going down to Big Pine Key and they had an underwater music festival, and you're absolutely right. I mean, it pales in comparison to what? To like the sonar that a dolphin can put out. But when you're underwater, unless you've ever scuba dived, and I know that you guys are all brother divers, but unless you scuba dive, when you're underwater and you get sound, you can't differentiate where that sound is coming from because it's in a 360. It's just it's sound moving through water is a lot different than it is through air.
True. That is true. But with
but you know, Kevin, in all the years I've been diving, I never, ever, ever encountered a dolphin in any of the times that
me
I was
either.
Diving, ever.
Me either.
And one of the things that maybe it's just mythology among the divers, but we always kind of speculated that the reason they didn't like us or didn't come around us was because of when we exhaled and we caused all the bubbles.
The bubbles and so forth.
Yeah.
Well, they actually could be attracted to that at times because there are stories that dolphins actually themselves make bubbles as form of just play. I mean, that's
yeah,
the one
goofing dolphins. Around.
Really?
They actually blow bubbles. And there was a book. It's by Bobby Sandup. It's called In the Presence of High Beings. And she did research, kind of like informal amateur research. research out in Hawaii and so forth, where she was actually out there and she started visualizing things, and the dolphins would actually start blowing bubbles towards her. And according to the diver, they had never seen that in their life. And it became, whenever they would come back, this dolphin, every time the dolphin saw her, would start blowing bubbles, but known to no one else. And it was the same, you know, diving area and so forth that other divers have gone to, scuba divers and groups that they would bring out there. It was kind
That's
of
really interesting.
Yeah, it was.
Because so, I never saw them. They stayed away from us for the most part.
It's very unusual. They do attract a certain individual. Sorry, Grant, you must not be one of them. Something about it, dude.
You don't know how rich you are, Kevin.
But I'll tell you what, in all fairness, the very first time I've ever had an experience with the dolphins, it was after Betsy Smith. I was not in the water with them, but it got me so much that there was another part of the research center where, of course, if you paid, back then in the 1980s, it was a very small fee. You paid a fee. They taught you a little bit more about the dolphins and so forth. And you were able to swim with them. It was like an hour, a half an hour. You basically went through a program where they gave you, you know, what dolphins are, how to, you know, the conservation of them and so forth. In the second half, you basically went in the water with them. And there were some tricks, of course, that they had you, you know, where you could get your, hold onto their fin, their dorsal fin, and they rode you around and so forth. And my first experience, which really got me into it, was that I was just there floating because it's about 15, 20 feet of water in its natural lagoon. And for some reason, I just visualized, just in a split second, what it would be like. I could picture, I saw myself and the dolphin down on the very bottom. I wanted to see what the dolphin and the bottom looked like. Next thing I knew, within, I would say, close to about 6 to 7 seconds, the dolphin came up to me. I held on to its dorsal fin. I was down on the bottom, and it happened so fast.
You're kidding.
No, and that's what led me into this thing that, whoa, what is there? Is this telepathy? Is it just coincidence? What's going on? It's very, very strange. But that's what kind of led me to this theory, yeah. You know, and that's when I started doing research in some of these other individuals that, you know, have beliefs in telepathy and so forth and working on it. So that's where it all began, literally, back in the 80s with that.
Why do you think it's been so hard for us over the years? Of course, perhaps the Navy's done something more, and they know more than we do, and they just never put it out because it's classified. But you know, back in the 70s and 80s, they struggled to try to learn their language. They tried to teach them, you know, or try to find a way to communicate. And the last I had heard, and of course I'm a little behind in the times, was that we never came up with a way to effectively communicate with them, aside from some of the things we've been discussing tonight. Now, maybe
right.
The dolphins, much to their credit, have decided after interacting with us for a while that it's not worth their time.
They're tired of it, definitely.
And their effort to try to communicate with us.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, it all started with Dr. John C. Lilly, and he tried to communicate, but again, he tried to impose upon the dolphins to communicate in a way that their clicks and whistles, he tried to phonetically turn it into verbal phonetics and so forth. To human language, and of course that worked to a small degree. I mean, he actually did have one dolphin that could say up to a few vowels and things like this that were a part of meaningful words that didn't represent symbols.
Certainly speaks volumes about our inability to communicate. I mean, when people say, gee, we sure do hope the aliens land on the White House lawn pretty soon, because we'll just march right up to them and we'll be so effective in communicating with them, when here we can't communicate with one of our own species.
Correct, exactly.
You know, can't even communicate with the dolphins. So I think, you know, that goes a long way to showing the difficulties in trying to establish communications or interspecies communications.
Right,
because
exactly.
Especially with dolphins and aquatic species like that, even though they're aquatic mammal, they have their own language, their own social, I'm sure, it'd be absolutely fascinating. I wish you could communicate with them and find out what their life is like. You know, it must be absolutely fascinating.
And especially find out what's going on out there. I mean, the ocean is the most, what did they say? That,
freedom.
Here we are spending all this money on space, and we have more unexplored areas of our own Earth below the ocean bottoms than we would ever, you know. I mean, there's so much there. And just to find out what's going on, because apparently these dolphins, like I said, going through evolution, have been around for so long, and they have evolutionized to such a degree that in many cases, many people think that they have almost surpassed humans in their intelligence to cope with their environment more than humans have. So it's almost
certainly
like,
in their environment, they're perfectly suited for their environment. And, you know, you think about it, it's just this vast... I think the only comparison you could possibly make would be like herding animals on a vast prairie, you know, or like how it must have been in trying to think of the right Paleozoic times, you know, when you had these huge mammals and herds of mammals wandering North America. You know, the distance was vast, there was everywhere to go, and they're foraging creatures, you know, they're looking for food. But for a dolphin, gosh, they can probably do that and still have a lot of fun because it's got to be exploring for them, too.
Here's a question from the chat room that might be related to this part of the discussion. I don't know if you can answer this, but I'll read the question and then bring up an interesting phenomena. The question is, have the dolphins communicated with you the reason many of them were beached in the Philippines last year? So that, you know, brings up why they beach. Of course, that could also extend to some whales, too.
Well, again, most of the reasons that I know of is primarily, from what I've read, is due to the sonar testing in different naval areas. I'm sure the Philippines, there's a lot of naval bases out there and so forth. But recently, they have brought back up due to the threat of terrorism in the oceans and certain coastlines and so forth. They're starting experimenting again with different sonars. And this is affecting different pods that travel all over different areas, whether it be the Pacific, the Bahamas, the California coastline. There have been sightings of beached animals all over, of whales as well as dolphins. So I think it's more the sonar and the testing.
I think also, too, we have to attribute some of it to just the, you know, they're creatures just like land creatures. And, you know, sometimes land creatures get disorientated. Maybe they have a middle ear infection, you know, because they are mammals.
Correct.
And then even, you know, a lot of times it seems to be with the bigger species, the whales and the dolphins and stuff, that the one that even when they're unbeached, they'll turn around and swim right back to the beach. So it's almost like something is really out of whack. Now, your point's well taken, Kevin. It could very well be sonar. But it could be a whole plethora of things.
There's so many different things. Sure.
Yeah, you know, that are going on there. You can't. I don't think it's fair to say it's just one thing, and I know that that's not what you're trying to do.
No, I mean,
but
that's
one
possibility.
Yeah, just one out of many.
I mean, there's changes in the atmosphere. We know that. There's all these different things that are happening to our environment that could affect our water cycle, what could therefore affect the oceans, which could cause changes in, you know, their physical conditions and so forth. So, I mean, definitely there's so many different things that could establish than beaching or anything of this nature. And I'm sure it has happened in the past, too. It's just that recently, I think at times when, you know, the media has kind of a lull in their action, they want to pull this up if it's something, hey, something new again, you know, and they publicize it. Because I'm sure it's been happening in different areas.
We're not done with Jihad Jane yet, I think. You know, we'll be running that until the middle, well past Easter, I suppose. But you know, it's really a fascinating thing that, you know, that these creatures have been in this environment for so many years. It's been a perfect environment where they've been in balance. I mean, everybody now is just, a lot of people were talking about how they found James Cameron's movie Avatar, you know, so absolutely fascinating. About these creatures that were in perfect harmony with their environment. Well, they didn't. You don't have to look to Alpha Centauri. It's right here on Earth. You know, these creatures were in perfect harmony with their environment. And you know, the other thing, Kevin, is Gosh, you don't think that we've polluted the oceans, do you? That might. I mean,
why would we do that?
What we've done to the oceans is absolutely criminal.
Yeah.
Oh, I know.
Well, here's another question from the chat room. Are dolphin populations stressed by overfishing?
Only if you're anywhere close to where the Japanese are.
Yes, unfortunately, dolphins happen to be on their menu at times. But I would say definitely in certain areas they could be, because as you said before, Grant, you know, when it goes back to the ancient times, why were they near human beings? Could it be possibly due to the fish that it's a free meal or something like that? If there is overfishing, yes, there has been cases where they've been caught in tuna nets and things of this nature, of course.
And they drown.
Right, exactly. Because, again, they're breathing, you know, they are mammals. They have to come up for air and so forth. And their breathing is voluntary. It's not, you know, involuntary. Even on the surface, if they are hurt on the surface, if they go unconscious, they will drown because they cannot float on the top and they will keep breathing. They're totally voluntary, and that's been one of the problems with doing research with them. You need to put an EEG machine on their electrodes on their head because of their moving too much, and you can't, put them under or something like that to relax them, because literally it will stop their breathing. They will die. Lee tried to do that, and it didn't work. So it's very possible, yes, they could be stressed over the fishing. They do have, though, I mean, I'm sure there's plenty of fish out there, but that could be one reason, definitely. Is that the reason why they're beaching? That I couldn't say. I'm sure there's plenty more fish out there and in deeper waters that they could easily get.
Interesting.
But getting back to the PSI,
yeah, go for
that
it.
To me was the most interesting thing, I think, with the dolphins. And there's other things just besides telepathy. There was also cases, I mean, with their sonar, it's very unusual that they can actually see through objects. It's almost to the point of what we would call remote viewing.
How so?
There's been experiments where they have actually, because they thought, okay, is it possibly just pure sonar? And sonar, there are certain type of things like so much thickness of lead walls and things like that that the sonar cannot penetrate. And they tried to have dolphins within a tank with a particular type of wall that's solid lead or whatever the case may be that sonar will not penetrate. And on the other side, had some form of activity, a playful activity, because dolphins are definitely playful. They constantly get easily bored. So they
Okay, we're back on. For some odd reason, our connection just dropped right out from underneath us. And
I was just getting comfortable, too, you know.
Night
shots just, like, yanked the rug right out from underneath.
You know, I don't know what it was, because my chat room connection just
Hello there. Can you hear me again?
Yeah, we got Kevin back. Good.
Okay, you got me back. There you go. Well, that was kind of weird.
Yeah, we were just saying we just got dropped.
I think the dolphins don't want us talking about them anymore.
It's not the dolphins. It's the U.S. Navy or somebody.
There you go. They're afraid of me.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
So
you kidding me? I'm afraid of them. I don't want to.
Should one of you guys have a black helicopter hovering over your house?
If I do, it's silent.
Yeah, there you go. Those are the best kind.
Yeah. In the shape of a UFO.
At least you can sleep.
Yeah. At least I think so. So, Kevin, you were describing something before we so rudely dropped.
Okay. Can you hear me again, guys?
Yeah.
Okay,
if you could just move your microphone just slightly above your mouth.
Okay. Can you hear me now better, a little better?
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. We're just getting a lot of breath of air striking the microphone.
Oh, okay. Sorry about that.
No problem. We'll take you out in the village square and flog you later.
Yeah, there you go. I thought so.
Put you in stocks first, of course. Yeah. Okay. Let everybody in the village toss something at you, you know.
But again,
send you a little love.
But again, these PSI experiments, really interesting stuff. I mean, that's something I would love to do in the future. It's just very difficult, you know, anymore. But I would love to do something like that. Because as you said before, Grant, there is, unfortunately, very little research right now dealing with it.
Well, you know, it's probably, Kevin, it's probably a matter of logistics, you know. It's got to be hard to keep a pen with dolphins and keep them fed and keep the crew there and maintenance and all, keep them healthy. It's got to be tough.
Well, the problem also with the dolphins are they get easily bored. You'd swear that they have ADD or something. I mean,
yeah.
Seriously, they do not focus very long. They get easily bored, which actually, according to what they say, is a sign of high intelligence to a degree. I mean, you know, they go on the one.
Essentially a species that is, you know, like a wanderer, a hunter-wanderer, or a hunter-gatherer.
Exactly. So,
they're going to move on. You know, if something interests them, that's how they get fed, or that's how good things happen, by being curious sometimes.
And I think that's
that. Maybe that's why they're so similar to us.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's one of the problems with the scientists, because in doing research, you know, I mean, let's face it, as you said before, it's very costly. Keeping them in an area, feeding them, which they eat a lot of fish all the time and so forth, so you're constantly feeding them. And it's just the idea of funding for such things. Let's face it, everything is run by money, and it's monetary means, even research. And these, unfortunately, the scientists and the corporations, whatever they're funding it, they want scientific proof, and you're talking about, similar to a human being, you're talking about the psychological part of it. You're talking about almost like the human capabilities, that people get bored. They don't want to do it. Even subconsciously, they kind of just turn themselves off from it, and that's even why psychic and telepathy and all those types of experimentations in the past
I think the dolphins are a little bit smarter, and they're not going to buy in to, you know, like strapping a bomb on and like, you know, doing some things. I just don't think that's their. I mean, you might be able to get a beluga whale to do that. You know, I know where they've taught beluga whales to go down and fetch torpedoes and stuff, you know. But I just think the dolphins would be way too wary of that. I think they're probably little heads and shoulders above some of the whale brethren. And, you know, I don't think they would be – I think they'd be difficult to do certain types of experiments with. But you know what, Kevin, at the risk of sounding cynical, I think that a lot of research today, if it doesn't have a weapons application, it don't get done.
Well, that's true, unfortunately.
In corporate America, if there's no application that they can use for weapons, then it's like, hey, forget it.
Unless you can find, you know, a wealthy benefactor. And just a quick sidebar here.
Or let me put it that way. Would they please call us?
Yeah.
Call us, or anytime. We're willing to talk at length. But I think that, yeah, even with...
Give to the Paranexus Dolphin Research Fund. There you go.
There you go. Or to the Me Foundation. I always like that one.
Yeah.
But, well.
So. I mean, there are still research going out there at this time. I mean, especially in Hawaii, California, off the coast. They are still working on this with interspecies communication. But, again, it's more of to the point now, where they're not looking at whether or not this telepathy exists or not. They're actually going one step further, and now they're looking at, okay, so what if it does exist? How can this help mankind? And that's what they're looking more at, therapy and so forth, dolphin therapy, getting individuals that have psychological problems, autistic children, people with certain disabilities, for some reason, being in the water with the dolphins, have cured or healed or has helped them in many ways that's almost of a holistic nature. And that's what they're looking at now in research, rather than, you know, is it PSI, is it telepathy, is there remote viewing involved, things of this nature. So that's what's happening today.
Yeah, you know, but the difficulty is, though, too, Kevin, mm-hmm. is that, you know what, I think interspecies by and large, and this is just my personal view, interspecies communications has by and large been very largely unsuccessful. Whether it's been, you know, with apes or chimpanzees, okay, you know, you can only go so far. And you know, when I can't remember the gal's name who had Coco, the gorilla, who they claimed could sign and all these different things. But I always keep thinking of the old psychological experiment with Hans the Counting Horse. You remember that one, Kevin?
Yes.
You know, and I'm just wondering, you know, if Coco was another Hans to some degree. You know what I mean? He had a very dedicated, she had a very dedicated trainer who's still around, and you know, but I just wonder, when you work in that close proximity, or whether or not you actually are communicating as effectively as you think you are. Because I think it's really tough.
Yeah.
You can't crawl into the mindset with a species that doesn't have the ability to communicate verbally by constructing words and things like that. It's tough enough there, but if we've got a population of dolphins that have attuned their, you know, their frontal lobes to be able to communicate telepathically in, you know, an aquatic situation, I mean, that's like light years ahead of us. If we can't communicate with clicks and whistles, I think we're really at a loss trying to communicate with them telepathically.
Yeah.
I wish we could.
Yeah.
I'm all for the research. It's just going to be really tough.
Well, there definitely has to be some form of connection there. Just like with human PSI or telepathy, there has to be some form of human connection, some emotional bond. Otherwise, mm-hmm. it's very quick. It's not consistent. The more emotional bond you can get between individuals, like as we were saying before, the mother and the child, twins, for instance, have some form of telepathic connective bond between them. There has to be some form of emotional bond. And as you said before, unfortunately, with these types of species, you have to consistently be with them, be around them, let them get to know you. There has to be that emotional bond, which takes some time.
Wouldn't it be funny if the emotional bond was evolutionary in nature, and that the dolphins at one point in time, and I mean, this is pure, you know, speculation on my part, what if they were primate in nature? Would there not be some ancestral bond that went back, I mean, as far as time? I mean, they would be cousins to us, and they are cousins to us.
To a degree, they are cousins to us, correct.
So, I mean, and they just chose to go the aquatic route, but they haven't forgotten it. It really makes you wonder about ancestral memories, you know.
Right, and that may be it. I mean, there's that, you know, quantum physics. There's that so-called mm-hmm. common field out there that lies between, and maybe because of that bond, it lies between these species and also with us. Maybe that's why, for centuries and so forth, there's been a connectedness between ancient civilizations and dolphins. You know, maybe
they've been revered. They really have. They've held a high place in human culture. I mean, of course, there's some people that are always going to eat them, but I mean, even the ancient Minoans and the Romans and the Greeks. And all through the Mediterranean and the cradle of civilization, they were revered. They were decorated. They were icons. All you have to do is go back through art of the ancients, and the dolphin is revered.
Yep.
So that's really, you know, it's an interesting relationship we have with them. You know, and I sure wish there was more research so that we could find out if we could communicate with them, because we're never going to be able to communicate with aliens that travel here, you know, across the span of light years. You know, more than likely, they'll be able to communicate with us, but we wouldn't have a clue. You know, it's fascinating. At the same time, it's kind of disappointing. But, you know, maybe, Kevin, like you said before, in the long run, it really doesn't matter if you can communicate through psi. if you can, you know, pick up, even if they're empathetic enough to pick up emotions and feelings. But, you know, I kind of wonder when they swim, when they get bored, is like they swim up because they're curious, thinking like, hey, you know what, they humans have kind of like skin like me. They're not shaped like me, but there's some similarities. I like the water. Come on, swim with me. And then once you can't swim with them, it's just like, see ya.
Yeah, right. They get bored too easily.
You want to have fun, so you want to join us. You could probably really bond with them if you were allowed to, if you could swim with them. If you could take off with them and find, be part of the pack, mm-hmm. that'd be okay. But they don't have time. They can't waste time doing it, like you said, so you so eloquently put it.
Yeah, unfortunately. And there are occasions where out in the wild they have come back to certain areas at a regular basis to individuals that have constantly gone there.
Mm-hmm. So they form a relationship.
Exactly. There's that bond I was referring to. And they do get closer, according to what researchers have found out. Every time they get closer and closer. So they are semi-timid. And, you know, there are marine biologists who do see signs, you know, they know when they can be agitated, when they get bored, when they get, like, a little bit angry, almost like humans. They have little tantrums. I mean, it's just that, you know, as being a different species, they have their own signs and ways of doing it, whether it be the movements of their tail or the movements of their head. And they have noticed this, and they have recorded it. And, you know, I mean, a lot of people are very, you know, scared of being around them because, you know, I mean, let's face it, if you've ever been in the water with a dolphin, a bottlenose dolphin, these things are humongous. I never realized how
big
they were. Yeah.
And powerful.
Yes. I had a friend that worked out in California with a trainer with a dolphin, and just trying to hold it one time when they were trying to give it some medicine, its fluke just hit her on the shoulder just slightly. It totally ripped and dislocated her shoulder.
Wow. Man, I don't doubt
that.
She
hasn't been back yet. She's been out of work now for over 2 years, doing other work in a veterinary office and so forth. She'd love to go back again, and she's right away. In fact, she's going to go back this summer because she just loved the opportunity so much, and she knew that it wasn't a dolphin's fault. I mean, you know, she was just there at the wrong place, the wrong time, and holding an area she shouldn't have, and that was it. I mean, it's not the dolphin's fault, you know.
So I assume that there is psi research going on currently connected to dolphins.
At this point in time, there is. It's more in the private sector, as far as I know, than the corporate or anything like that. Unless, Grant, as you said before, you know, there's Navy and so forth still working on it. In fact, that's one of the reasons why John Seeley quit, because he found out there was rumors that his dolphins were being used, and that's, in fact,
used and abused a lot of times.
Like for Vietnam, for bombs, through mines, going through the mines, sometimes setting off bombs, you know. And in fact, that's what the book, Grant, you and I were talking before the show, The Day of the Dolphin, was based upon.
Yep.
Of course, it was... The Day of the Dolphin, the movie with George C. Scott, you know, based upon the book and so forth, which is excellent if anyone wants.
It was the same parallel. All we got to do is tell them it's the same parallel as what happens to the Na'vi in Avatar. You know, it's the same situation, you know. They're exploited, and you know, we come in and we ruin it for them, you know.
Right.
Which unfortunately seems to be the way that, you know, we've got quite a few lessons to learn before we start going out and exploring the solar system about how we should treat our fellow species. There's no question about that.
That's a good point. So, Kevin, do you anticipate doing any further research along these lines?
Well, I would like to in the future. I have worked because the one thing I felt that may have been a common medium was, of course, the water. I mean, water is important to all life. And I even wrote an article about that. Here's a little plug for Paranexus for our listeners out there. If they're interested, I'm soon going to put up a blog, and I have my a paper that I wrote from the time in the 80s when I was down there with the dolphins. And I have some information about research, but also about my own personal experiences in which I talk about that human connectedness and telepathy, trying to use water as a medium for aquatic telepathy. And I did some experimentations with my wife to be at that time. And we did it with scuba gear underneath. And basically, I having some PSI and some formal experience with telepathy, her having none whatsoever, above the water we tried it, and then we tried it below the water in scuba gear. And the results were fascinating, even to the point where I got my master's and working up with Bill Roll up there. They wanted me to go up and speak in a lecture because it showed that there was statistically some proof that underneath the water there was some form of telepathy going on that never happened above. And it was more than just pure coincidence because it was over many, many different 100 tries at a time in different ways. So if anyone...
Well, you know, I think I've experienced the same thing. I don't know if you have, Doug, because all three of us for our audience benefits are divers. And, you know, it's uncanny what you say, Kevin, because I've experienced that. I've experienced that with dive partners. I've experienced that with students I was teaching. I've experienced it with my wife, who is also a diver. Maybe just the aquatic environment augments our ability to pick up on that, because look at what it does to sound waves. So who knows what it does to side waves?
Right, exactly.
Maybe it augments side waves because it certainly makes sound travels 5 times faster underwater. So who knows what it does with side? But it's really, and you know, I've also had experiences, and maybe, you know, because I've had experiences where I've had been diving and had turn around, and I'm like face to face with like a jewfish or a huge hogfish that I didn't even know was there until I turned around, and then for a moment it's almost like, you know, well, hey, how you doing? And then he goes his way and I go my way. So, you know, maybe, you know, there's something there, Kevin.
Definitely. And I think people even have seen us with pets. I think, you know, you touched upon this with dogs and things like that. There's dogs, there's cats. There's so many different animals that, you know, I know that many people think, oh, it's just coincidence, you know, that there's stories of animals that have found their way home, and there's no way they could pick up a scent in you know, hundreds of miles away, but they knew somehow where their owner was. Now, how did they realize that? Was it a form of remote viewing? Was there a form of some connected telepathy? You know, I mean, there's case after
case. Well, I think, you know, as a fellow student of psychology, you know as well as I do that for years and years, the whole psychological and the whole scientific community has pretty much said, animals, they can't think. They don't have any feelings. They don't have yada, yada, yada. And you know what? I think we're coming around to the fact that it doesn't matter on what level intellectually you're functioning at. I think everybody's got feelings. I think everybody has a sense of community. I think, you know, that's not just something that's isolated to humans, and we better start thinking along the terms of, guess what? Everybody might think the same way that we do about some things, you know?
Right. And we have to stop being so egotistic.
Arrogant.
We measure, right, everything by human standards.
Anthropomorphic.
Start looking, right. And I think that maybe the quantum... And I think the quantum physics in the future may be the answer.
Absolutely.
I think that's going to be the answer to a lot of this stuff.
Yeah.
So definitely.
That interconnectivity.
Yeah.
I mean, so we're down to about our last minute. And, you know, Kevin, some interesting stuff, some interesting
fascinating
research.
Fascinating stuff.
We'll look forward to your blog on paranexus.org with some further information. And hopefully, well, I know you'll be back. Hopefully we can look at some similar stuff or related, obviously, since your cup of tea is psi phenomena.
Definitely.
Absolutely.
Thanks so much for joining us tonight, Kevin.
No problem. I enjoyed it.
Great stuff. And
it's been a pleasure.
We appreciate the time from our listeners as well. I know many of you come each week, and we appreciate that. Many others listen to the archive downloads, so we appreciate that as well. If you're not yet a Paranexus member, we'd love to have you join us. Just visit paranexus.org, and there's more information there, a lot of benefits, including your own anomalous research blog, web hosting for your anomalous research website, a plethora of other benefits. We just launched the new directory so that the public can find you. If you conduct public investigations, they can find you there. Plus, of course, we've got Paranexus Academy at paranexusacademy.org, and we're out of time. Folks,
hey, don't forget to tune in next week, though, for Butch Witkowski and the human abduction mutilation
Yes.
Which, that'd be a great show.
Yeah, and that's going to be a special 90-minute show. So we are now on overtime. We're archived. We're going to let everybody go. Have a great week. See you next week.
Have a wonderful weekend, folks. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
It's Paramex's universe.